Former President Donald Trump is being investigated for possible violations of the Espionage Act, for election fraud, and for fomenting a crowd to storm the U.S. Capitol. Most Republican voters believe the misinformation that the 2020 election was stolen, and GOP candidates across the country are running for office based on those lies. Extremist views are becoming embedded into the Republican Party, and all of this prompts the question, how did the GOP get here and where does it go from here? Joining us now to talk about this is Dana Milbank, Washington Post columnist and author of the new book called The Destructionists, the 25-year crackup of the Republican Party. Dana, thanks so much for being here.
It's great to be with you, Celeste.
You make a point, even in the title, to talk about this as a 25-year trend, meaning Donald Trump did not cause a shift in the GOP, but you say his presence is a culmination of something that has been building up for 25 years. What does that mean?
Yeah, I think it's crucial to understand that because it tells us where we are today and where we're going. You know, so now we're talking about the search in Mar-a-Lago, and Trump and his defenders have come up with these truly bonkers conspiracy theories, like the FBI, the most elite law enforcement agency in America, has planted classified information at Mar-a-Lago. And of course, this follows the big lie, the biggest conspiracy theory of all. To understand these things and how so many people can believe them, I take us back 25 years to when Newt Gingrich and a congressman named Dan Burton were encouraging people to believe other conspiracy theories, such as this one that a lawyer in the Clinton White House, Vince Foster, had been murdered, possibly by Hillary Clinton herself, when in fact it had been studied repeatedly and it was a tragic suicide. You see this happening in big ways and small ways over the years, the lies about the Iraq War and the falsehood that Saddam Hussein was responsible for 9/11, the death panels that Sarah Palin talked about during the Obamacare debate, that birther libel suggesting that Barack Obama was not born in the United States. In each of these cases, you know, they could be debunked over and over again, but what Republican leaders realized is if they kept saying it, you could get a lot of people, tens of millions of people, to believe these things. Here you had people at a high level embracing them. That's how we got to the big lie, and that's how we're getting to these shenanigans now at the Mar-a-Lago search.
So let's go through some of the examples that you have given. In Bush v. Gore, when it was all coming down to counting votes in Florida, protesters showed up at a number of places to stop the process of the recount. So this was called the Brooks Brothers Riot. Many of those were front and center, turned out to be paid Republican operatives. Can you tell us a little bit about that, especially in terms of the echoes that we now have of the Brooks Brothers riots in current events?
Exactly. And that's why I went back through all these things, because at the time it was, well, this is quite unusual, but you begin to see them as predicates for what happened afterwards. So that was during the recount in Florida. You basically had this mob that was generated by the Bush campaign, people working with the Bush campaign. In fact, Roger Stone, the future Trump advisor, was down there working on this as well. Miami-Dade Elections Board was going to be recounting all the ballots. Bush campaign organized people to be there saying, stop the fraud, stop the count, cheaters. But of course, when you get to January 6, 2021, you begin to say, well, wait a second, there was a predicate for this there. And we've seen more of that kind of intimidation. You go back through the years, happened during the Tea Party, during the debate over Obamacare, had a mob of thousands of Tea Party activists outside the Capitol. The Capitol Police were struggling to keep them outside the building. They got to within 50 feet of it. You had Republican members of Congress out there on the House balcony fomenting the crowd, leading them in chants. Again, not necessarily of as much consequence until you see what has come later and how these things developed in different iterations built upon it.
Another example that you give of a misinformation campaign is the lead up to the war in Iraq. And I want to touch on this because you've talked about the echoes of Dick Cheney's involvement in that campaign to justify the war in Iraq and how that's led us to where we are with his daughter. Can you explain?
Yes, it's almost like a Greek tragedy in a way when you look at the forces that are bringing down Liz Cheney right now, almost certain to lose her Republican primary in Wyoming. Now, she has called out Donald Trump rightly for weaponizing patriotism. And she has said that a free society cannot function if leaders are telling lies, if they're not dealing in the truth. And I say amen to that. That is exactly right. The sort of tragedy in this is those forces, the weaponizing of patriotism and the strategic use of lies, were very much, if not pioneered, were certainly moved much further along by her father. The Bush administration, Dick Cheney, Karl Rove, and others, the vice president's lies about Iraq's nuclear weapons that it did not have, and the untruths about the links to Saddam Hussein and 9/11. Of course, the intelligence was at fault for much of this, but even where the intelligence was right, he went well beyond that in creating a case for war that just did not exist in the facts. And that's part of the disinformation that really took hold in the Republican base.
There's also the question about climate change and how the attempt to deny the science on climate change has now become mostly associated with the Republican Party. Why?
Well, it follows a very similar pattern to other things. Going back to the Gingrich era, he abolished the Congressional Office of Science and Technology, which was supposed to bring unvarnished facts into the scientific debate. So when we think of Trump taking on the experts and expertise and science, and even to a greater extent, the media as the enemy of the American people, there were precedents for this. It became in Republican officials' interest to say climate change was a hoax. It became something that was required to be a member in good standing of the Republican Party. So I think it's just one more of those things challenging the very notion of expertise as being a suspect. The damage to our democratic system is the same because they are convincing tens of millions of people to believe things that are false and, you know, particularly damaging in the case of the big lie when people are being taught by the tens of millions not to believe the outcomes of elections unless their guy wins.
So was there something the Democrats could have done to better push back against some of these untruths?
Well, certainly the Democrats can be fairly blamed at various points for being unable to rally around a common message. You know, Democrats are not very good at following order and being organized. It's a bit like herding cats. But it's a bit of an unfair criticism in a sense because it's not really a problem of polarization like two parties going in different directions. You have one of the two major American political parties that has stopped being a good faith participant in the democratic process. So it's sort of an asymmetric fight, if you will. There's one side that's sort of playing by the traditional rules of operating in a democratic system, and the other side is rewriting the rules, saying we don't have to follow the norms of a democratic system.
I have to ask you this question kind of from a selfish standpoint, which is, in what way have journalists enabled this behavior? I have to assume that if you're investing in conspiracy theories, part of the reason you're doing that is because it's strategically working for you in electoral politics.
Absolutely. And I think our colleagues in journalism had a lot to do with Donald Trump's rise, taking his rallies without interruption or any fact-checking, taking his pronouncements at face value and having Democrats respond to them as if the truth and a falsehood were two equal things. I think journalism in general has caught up, maybe a bit too late now, but you know, we're doing the real-time fact-checking. We're saying that what Donald Trump and his supporters are saying about the election is a lie, which of course it is a lie. So certainly we deserve criticism as journalists for being late to this and allowing a lot of damage to occur. We do always have to stay on our toes. You know, you have Kevin McCarthy, the leader of the House Republicans, saying they've weaponized the Justice Department. Just extraordinary things. And I think it takes the press, we're sort of back on our heels. How do you deal with that? Fox News, right after this court-ordered search, talking about war, talking about an attack, saying, you know, if they're coming after Trump, they're coming after you next. On Newsmax, they were talking about that Donald Trump was in danger of assassination. You know, this is very clearly, as we can see, riling people to violence.
So how does this end? Where does this, after looking at 25 years of history here, where is it going?
Well, Celeste, I think the good news is in the long run, it works out, because so much of this, what's going on in the Republican Party now, is a white backlash against the emerging multicultural majority in America. Now, eventually, in the year 2045 or shortly thereafter, there will be this multicultural majority. This tension will resolve eventually. The question is, what do we have left of our democracy when we get to that? That's why I wrote this book, because I think Democrats, whether that's capital D Democrats or small D Democrats, need a wake-up call to recognize that, you know, our civil society, our democratic way of life is under threat, and we have to be engaged as voters and in other ways to preserve as much of this as we can so that it's there for the next generation. So I'm very optimistic in the long run, and I'm beating the drums to get people engaged in the short run to preserve what we can.
Dana Bilbank is a columnist for The Washington Post. His book is called The Destructionists, The 25-Year Crackup of the Republican Party. Dana, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Celeste.